Part 6. What has string theory done for you lately? Having studied the core ideas of string theory and its cohort, let's apply them to the knotty problems we looked at in Part 3, such as what happens inside black holes, what came before the Big Bang, and why quantum theory is so inscrutable. Although getting hard evidence is, well, hard, experimenters are already nibbling around the edges of the theories. Many scientists are dissatisfied with the rate of progress, but they haven't come up with any viable alternatives. Chapter 19. Black Brains and Balls of String. In this chapter, black holes as a new state of matter. Where'd the information go? Loopy black holes. Back to time machines. The saying goes that in times of stress, you can see what people are really made of. Much the same is true of matter and space-time. No situation is more stressful than a black hole. The two leading candidate quantum theories of gravity offer deep, if still patchy, explanations of these cosmic sinkholes. In string theory, a black hole brings out the true stringiness of matter. In loop gravity, it reveals the atomic nature of space-time. As for the related phenomenon of time machines, the theories send mixed messages. Getting warm. If the goal of physics is to unite all the scattered children of nature into one big family, the prospective family member that'll require the most coaxing is the black hole. Leaving aside its destructive tendencies, the black hole just seems too different from protons and photons to ever be brought under the same conceptual roof. So the challenge of a quantum theory of gravity is to domesticate this beast. As established in Chapter 8, black holes raise two questions. First, what exactly happens to matter that falls into one? Einstein's general theory of relativity says it's compressed into a mathematical point, the singularity, at the center of the whole, achieving infinite density. An infinite anything is scarcely believable. Second, what happens to the information embodied in the matter? Is it lost or somehow stored for later retrieval? Loss would violate quantum theory, and storage would make the black hole a peculiarly methodical pack rat. String theory treats both problems as aspects of a deeper issue. According to general relativity, a black hole converts matter into pure gravitation, that is, into the warping of space and time. For matter and space-time to interconvert, they must really be made of the same stuff. So black holes are not just giant monsters out in the cosmos. They are actually windows into the ultimate composition of matter. Suppose you have an ice cube and start heating it up. It melts to water, then boils to steam. If you keep the heat on, the H2O molecules dissociate into atoms, the atoms into protons and neutrons, and the protons and neutrons into quarks. You reach billions and billions of trillions of degrees, and eventually the particles begin behaving as strings. Finally, you reach a point where despite pumping energy into the strings, you can't raise their temperature. They keep finding new ways to vibrate, so the average energy per vibrational pattern, which is what temperature represents, stays fixed. This temperature is known as the Hagedorn temperature of strings, which is equal to about 10 to the 31st power kelvins. Definition: the Hagedorn temperature in string theory is either the maximum temperature that strings can attain or the point of transition to a new phase of matter. A fixed temperature sounds like what happens when you melt ice. As you heat the ice, its temperature goes up. But when it reaches the melting point, the temperature plateaus. The heat you apply goes into changing the phase from solid to liquid. Only when the transition is done does the temperature resume its upward march. By analogy, strings appear to melt at the Hagedorn temperature into a new form of matter. Intriguingly, this phase of transition occurs just when strings have so much energy that they can collapse into a black hole. The one proviso is that the strings must also be coiled up. So maybe the black hole represents a new form of matter. At first glance, black holes and strings are mismatched. The information storage capacity of a string is proportional to its length and therefore to its energy. The information storage capacity of a black hole is proportional to its area and therefore to its energy squared. In addition, a string's temperature rises with energy, whereas a hole's temperature decreases with energy. Amazingly, though, the information capacities and temperature values are numerically equal at the melting point. So strings do match up with black holes after all. A hot string melts into a hole, or going the other way, a hole freezes to form a string. As a black hole emits radiation, its energy diminishes until it turns into strings, which cool off and turn back into recognizable particles, maybe even an ice cube. For many physicists, this clean dovetailing of strings and black holes alone justifies their interest in string theory. Quantum leap. String theorists aren't the only ones who conceive of black holes as transitions between phases of matter. Physicists approaching quantum gravity from the inspiration of ordinary fluids and solids do so as well. They conjecture that relativity theory itself fails at the transition, much as the laws of fluid flow seize up when water freezes. So far, though, the idea is more of a hazy analogy than a solid theory. A related idea is that black holes are gravistars, where gravity switches from being an attractive force to being a repulsive one. The repulsive interior of the gravistar counterbalances the inward pressure of the overlying material. The theory hasn't attracted much support, though, because it doesn't explain how gravity could make the transition. Melting pot. This matching argument applies at the level of an individual string, whereas a black hole really involves the collective behavior of gazillions of strings. To capture them en masse, string theorists whip out their favorite conceptual tool, duality, which holds that two situations that seem different are actually equivalent. In the case of the so-called gravity gauge duality discussed in Chapter 18, a scenario where gravity operates is equivalent to one where it doesn't, but where particles engage in a complex quantum choreography. The two scenarios don't look anything like each other. They don't even operate in the same number of space dimensions, but they give identical answers to equivalent observations. So this duality lets string theorists do some lateral thinking. The particle choreography may be complex, but it's still easier to follow than the workings of gravity. So we can start off with a gravitational situation, translate it into a non-gravitational one, and then sort out what happens. Everything in one scenario has a counterpart in the other. A recognizable object, such as an ice cube in the gravitational scenario, corresponds to a clump of particles in the non-gravitational one. Heating the object corresponds to heating the clump. Eventually, the object gets so hot that it collapses into a black hole, and at that moment, the clump breaks up into individual particles. It literally melts. The resulting fluid, like any fluid, has a temperature, which matches the temperature calculated on the gravitational side. Because the particles obey quantum theory, they don't lose any information when they turn from clump to fluid. From this, we can conclude that the black hole they correspond to doesn't lose any information either. A body falling into the hole corresponds to a clump of particles plopping into the fluid and dissolving like a sugar cube in hot tea. The fluid retains a memory of the clump. The radiation emitted by the hole must not be purely random, but must subtly encode the complete blueprint of everything that ever fell into the hole. That, in itself, is a major discovery. It changes what physicists think would happen if you jumped into a black hole. I still feel compelled to advise you against it, but at least you wouldn't be completely lost, just thoroughly mashed. The information encoded in your body would outlive you, and the radiation emitted by the hole would subtly convey your state of mind and health at the moment of your demise. Quantum leap. Another interesting case study is the Flatland black hole, namely, a black hole in a 2D space. It's a little surprising that such a hole is possible at all. A planar space lacks the complexity you'd think might be essential for one. In particular, objects in 2D can't attract one another gravitationally. Even so, if space has the right shape, objects can get stuck in a region just as if they were in a higher-dimensional black hole. Applying gravity-gauge duality, physicists have confirmed these holes have an information storage capacity that scales up with their area, which in two dimensions is the circumference of the hole. These holes even emit radiation. A black hole built of brains. But what exactly is the new phase of matter in the hole? How exactly does the radiation it gives off reflect what fell in? How does information go the wrong way on what was supposed to be a gravitational one-way street? Ah, those are the big questions. Answering them requires translating from those complex particle interactions back to gravitational phenomena, which is like translating from one language to another without the benefit of a dictionary. You have to start with simple things you can point to. Beer, cerveza. Beer, cerveza. And slowly move up from there. Theorists have focused on special cases that are computationally easy, such as holes that have ceased emitting radiation because they have a charge, like an electric charge, that stabilizes them. Such holes can't actually exist in our universe, but they serve as a proof of principle. Within our visible three dimensions of space, a black hole looks bland and featureless, but in the hidden extra dimensions lurks a swarm of brains. Strings stretch from brain to brain in a big tangle, not unlike the wires behind my wife's desk, which she freely admits is something of a black hole. These strings are the molecules of the black hole and encode its information. The number of their possible arrangements is proportional to the area of the hole, in accordance with the holographic principle discussed in Chapter 18. Some theorists argue that when you work through what the brain swarm is doing, the singularity at the core of the hole isn't a pinprick after all, but quite the contrary. The strings stretching between brains in the extra dimensions vibrate in the lateral direction, which is to say, they vibrate in the visible dimensions of space. The strings have so much energy that their oscillations swell up and fill out the space within the hole's boundary, which can be millions of kilometers across. Being so large and floppy, the strings get tangled like a ball of yarn or a fuzzball, as Samir Mather of The Ohio State University calls it. The boundary of the fuzzball is not, in fact, a point of no return for infalling matter. As you fall through the boundary, you scarcely notice anything unusual since the fuzz is so diffuse. You and other material pile up near the center of the hole, and then the fuzz gets to work, picking you apart and assimilating you. It takes eons. The fuzz is ever so slightly changed for your presence. The radiation it gives off carries your imprint. What happens is much the same as if you fell into Jupiter. You'd gradually disintegrate, alter the structure of Jupiter a very little bit, and skew the radiation the giant planet gives off. The fuzzball concept remains fuzzy. String theorists can describe black holes as static objects, but haven't been able to follow how they develop over time. One thing is fairly clear, though. The fuzzball and other stringy explanations involve the breakdown of one of the basic features of space-time as we know it: locality. Points remain linked, even though they appear to be too far apart to communicate. For the fuzzball, strings interconnect points within the ball. After something falls in and gets assimilated, its position becomes undefined. This might be our glimpse into what underlies space and time. Quantum leap. Regardless of what black holes actually are, string theory might alter them in one other respect. To make a black hole, you need to squeeze matter into a small enough volume. Gravity isn't strong enough to do so if the mass is less than 10 to the negative 8th power kilogram, the mass equivalent of the Planck energy scale. But if gravity is diluted by extra dimensions, it might be stronger than it seems. The smaller the distance, the less dilution has occurred, and the stronger gravity might be. If so, holes lighter than 10 to the negative 8th power kilogram might exist, and particle accelerators might be able to make them. Loophole. Unlike string theory, loop gravity doesn't associate black holes with a new phase of matter, at least not directly. They're still contorted regions of space with much the same geography as they have in general relativity, a singularity surrounded by a boundary marking the gravitational point of no return. But loop gravity smooths out the rough edges of this description. The boundary never settles into a perfectly smooth, round shape. It fluctuates and oscillates at the quantum level. These ripples file away the information of infalling bodies and imprint it onto the outgoing radiation. Areas in loop gravity are naturally divided up in units of the Planck scale, which is just what is needed to explain the hole's information capacity. The singularity never achieves infinite density because the atomic nature of space-time puts a cap on how much energy you can squeeze into a region. The wavelengths of photons can be no smaller than the Planck scale. If you try to push more energy into space, space pushes back, quite literally. Gravity switches from an attractive force to a repulsive force. This might explain not only black holes, but also their troubled siblings, naked singularities. In these black holes without boundaries, we can see all the way down to the ultra-dense wad of matter at their core. However, physicists debate whether such things can even get close to forming. Long before quantum effects kick in, ordinary gravity should warp space-time to demarcate a point of no return. But if it somehow failed to do so, loopy effects would step in and cause the wad to blow apart in a grand explosion. The repulsive force could also cause space to expand within a black hole, giving birth to a baby universe. It's like a parallel universe, except that it's not parallel so much as nested within our universe like a Matryoshka doll. The boundary of the hole hides the newborn universe from us. The baby universe endures even when the black hole appears to have evaporated away. Evaporation simply means that the black hole cuts its umbilical cord to our universe. Material from our universe can no longer flow into it, but the baby lives on. For some theorists, a baby universe explains what happens to the information that falls into a black hole. It's never truly lost, but takes up residence in the baby. Both the loopy and stringy approaches to black holes have been criticized as incomplete, even contrived. A more charitable way to put it is that they've done better on the question of whether black holes lose information, the answer probably not, than on where the information gets stored and how it gets back out again. They've taken Hawking's calculations one level deeper than before, which is progress, but hardly the final word. A broader moral is that different approaches to quantum gravity yield much the same answers. This suggests that beneath the details of the calculations are some common principles yet to be fully appreciated about how space and time are put together. Timed out? I'd love to write a whole chapter on what the nascent quantum theories of gravity have to say about time machines, picking up the train of thought from Chapter 10. Even better, I'd love to report that physicists and venture capitalists have founded startup companies to build time machines for sale to the public. But alas, there's just not that much to say yet. Loop gravity is mute. Bucky space and causal set theory eliminate time machines by fiat, and string theory's findings are inconclusive. On the positive side, strings provide the two key ingredients of time machines. First, they can tear and reconnect space-time, producing wormholes. Like black hole formation, wormhole formation is a type of transition between phases of matter. Second, strings and brains permit negative energy, which can prevent a wormhole from collapsing in on itself. Acquiring these ingredients was once thought to be an insurmountable obstacle. Putting the ingredients together is what now poses the problem. Gravity-gauge duality offers some clues. Time travel involves gravitational contortions whose particle counterparts violate basic tenets of quantum theory. For quantum theory to hold, gravity must somehow act to nip time machines in the bud. In one scenario, a black hole spinning faster than a certain threshold could act as a time machine, but the black hole regulates itself to prevent that. Whenever it threatens to breach the threshold, centrifugal forces cause it to bloat in size and slow itself down. So string theory tends to support physicist Stephen Hawking's intuition that time machines foil their own formation. Nature keeps playing bait and switch, dangling the possibility of time machines before us and then snatching it back. Adventurers may have to content themselves with jumping into black holes. The least you need to know. In string theory, black holes are to ordinary objects what steam is to water, another phase of matter. The new phase keeps a full record of everything the hole devours and ultimately releases radiation that encodes this record. The boundary of the black hole may be a two-way street, contrary to relativity theory. Loop gravity suggests that the singularity at the center of a black hole gets smeared out. Otherwise, though, the details of the hole remain hazy. Time machines seem unlikely, but their viability is still an open question.